Hello and welcome to The Outer Frame, the show where we talk about the movies that aren't talked about enough. I'm your host, Jason Sellers, and on today's episode, we will be discussing the 2006 drift racing film, The Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift. But first, let me introduce the person with the most overdone southern accent that I know, Donnie Nelson!
Don't you know it?
I only started laughing because I could see you starting to smile.
My name is Cameron Poe. No, I don't know. I think you know what? You know how we always talk about, like, team-up movies?
July 14th.
July 14th. You know how we always talk about, like, team-up films? Like, oh, we should have, like, the best people and, like the horror icons team up, or, like, people are obsessed with team-ups in general. Well, I think we should just, like, take every role that has a bad southern accent that they're putting on... And they all have to, like, they all have to team up, like, Cameron Poe and then the character from the film that we're going to be watching. I don't actually remember his name off the top of my head.
Generic white male.
Correct. Correct.
I mean, I don't know. It could be...
Sean.
Army Hammer. Could be... I mean, you could just name one of those guys.
True.
You guys all know who we're talking about. Just whenever they need, like, a generic-looking white dude, they cast one of these people. Sean Boswell, that's the character's name.
Yep. Which is funny, because I just looked at his name, like, more than a couple times when we were looking at the Wikipedia page before this, and it left my brain. The name is so white, it's so forgettable.
So, we are... discussing this film in honor of Hobbs and Shaw coming out, and Donnie is a fairly big fan of this movie, and I have never seen this movie but have been frequently criticizing it.
Frequently.
just because maybe not frequently, maybe just overly critical of it just because of how absurd it sounds. But before we get into that, Donnie, what is the worst thing that you've seen this week?
Well, I figured I'd go with a little bit of a theme this week with my best and worst, in which I just watched the first episode of the new show on Amazon Prime called The Boys, which is about
The Boys.
Superheroes just, like, not actually being as good as you think they are. And also...
A lot of the trailers look like that movie Hancock, but like a TV show. Is that...
No. Like, okay. not to like derail into a conversation about Hancock, but but Hancock is actually like they use as them as superheroes as like a form of getting into something else, which like I feel like is a lot less interesting of a movie once that movie goes along. And this they get away from the superhero thing, like, in Hancock, like, later into the movie.
Then it becomes terrible.
They're just like, oh no, they're actually gods that, like, can't be together, and you're like, this is the stupidest movie I've ever seen.
This makes no goddamn sense.
Yeah, because if they're together, then horrible things happen. What's different about The Boys is that this is actually something that, like, what they're trying to do, and it's based on a comic. It's very much like taking what Marvel is doing with the cinematic universe, making it like an industry, and like making it so many people love these characters, and like they have good PR, everything like that. But they actually get up to really bad shit. Like, they're actually, like, bad, horrible people. But they're all, like, under this conglomerate, like, this corporation that's controlling what they're doing. There's leases of superheroes to cities, just like they would sell a team from one city to the other and trade and stuff like that. So that stuff is all... it's all terrible. But at least the first episode's really good, and the person who is in it, who I love and who should be in more things, is Carl Urban, our favorite New Zealand actor. And so I went with a little theme this week, since I was happy about that. I was like, I'll go, you know what, I'm going to watch a few Carl Urban movies. And of the two Carl Urban movies that I will be talking about today, the worst one was The Chronicles of Riddick. The Chronicles of Riddick, it's funny because it ties in because we have Mr. Vin Diesel himself of Fast and Furious fame who stars in those films. And Carl Urban plays a... So there's, like, in that movie, there's a thing called the Deathmongers. Or, you know, like, they're essentially... worship death. Like, they want to be dead. Like, their leader has, like, gone to the underworld and come back. So he's, like, half mm-hmm. dead. And so he has superpowers. And then that's, like, essentially what the religion is based around. And Carl Urban plays a character who is, like, very, like Macbeth, where he has, like, a very, overbearing and controlling or manipulative wife in, Thandi Newton's character. And Thandi Newton is, like, hamming it up to, like, the nth degree in that film. And, but the hilarious thing is that Carl Urban is actually, like, being... very, like, he has little moments of, like, outburst in the film, but he's very, like, mm-hmm. straight-faced and serious and, like, no, I'm actually, you know, I need to make sure that I do this. And, but he's weak-willed in the sense that, like, Thandi Newton's character is just like, oh, you have to do this, or, like, you, this is your time to take power, you know, essentially being manipulated. And it's not his best performance. I honestly don't think the Riddick films are the worst thing in the world, but also they...
No, but The Chronicles of Riddick is pretty bad.
Yeah, well...
I mean, I enjoy Riddick, and I enjoy what I've seen of Pitch Black, but The Chronicles of Riddick is not great, other than the video game that they made based off of it.
Mm-hmm. Which wasn't even, like, on the movie. They pretty much just started using... They called the movie The Chronicles of Riddick, and then they just kind of, like, decided to call the franchise The Chronicles of Riddick, which is very weird, because, like in making stuff after that point, like, now you can, most of the time when you have to buy or review, like, Pitch Black, it'll be The Chronicles of Riddick, Pitch Black.
Yep.
And there's no subtitle for the regular Chronicles of Riddick, which is very funny. But also there's the anime film called Dark Fury, which I recommend anybody who has seen Riddick stuff, but for some reason has gone over their head, is very good. This film, however, not. I would say it's a suitable action vehicle for Vin Diesel, but also he has the Fast and Furious franchise, so there's not really any room for him to, or, like, any reason for him to do that. I think they have some good mythology, and, like, they're kind of obsessed with, like, the lore of it, but they don't actually, they're not actually capable of telling a good story.
Yeah, I think that the problem with this movie is, or the problem with The Chronicles of Riddick, which we're spending way too much time talking about The Chronicles of Riddick, but I think that the biggest problem with that movie is that they try to shove so much exposition into that movie to try to set up some kind of, you know, movie universe for Riddick to run around killing stuff in, and it just does not translate well. And I remember when I saw that movie, because I was, like, 14 or 15, so I was, like, target audience. And I watched it, and when we were done, I turned to my dad, and I was like, I don't understand what that movie was about. And he was like, well, the bald guy wanted to kill the other people, and then he did. Uh-huh. I was like, that's not a good plot for a movie.
Oh, it's a wonderful plot for a movie. If I had to rank Vin Diesel franchises, I would put this a very solid second between Fast and Furious being number one, this being number two, and the Triple X series being a very hard three.
No, I mean, it works with Riddick. Like, just plain old Riddick is great when he's running around killing people by himself. But, and they've said that they're like, Riddick sets up for them to make another movie where he goes back and tries to kill Carl Urban, which I would be on board for, as long as they don't try to shove more stupid shit in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just have it be a very straightforward plot. Like, don't shove
like
a bunch
Wick.
Of. Yeah, but yeah, it's funny because, like, if you think about it, John Wick is kind of like what Riddick wanted to be. Mm-hmm. Like, it's setting up this like this world building that is very interesting, but also not really taking away from the main plot or the main thrust of the film.
Mm-hmm.
But Riddick doesn't get that.
All right. Well,
what is the worst thing that you watched, Jason? Let's stop talking about the Chronicles of Riddick.
Oh man, I also watched a terrible movie with Vin Diesel. No, not Vin Diesel. No. I have not seen the first two Fast and the Furious movies in years. And I decided to rewatch them before watching Tokyo Drift so that I was up on all my mythology in terms of the Fast and the Furious world. And the worst thing that I saw this week was Too Fast, Too Furious, a film that appears to be nothing but like PG-13 pornography and CGI car explosions.
Mm-hmm.
And just is awful and terrible, and it doesn't have any of the playfulness of the first one. It doesn't have any of the cool practical effects from the first one. It's all just shitty, awful CGI, and it makes it even worse because they transpose Tyrese Gibson and Paul Walker's face into the CGI cars, which just makes it more obvious that you're not watching two people actually drive a car. And these segments, like the first movie, can last for about 20 minutes. And it's 20 minutes of you watching nothing and knowing that you're watching nothing. And I don't know, it was just such a garbage movie. I do want to say, though, that one of the things that made me laugh is that after watching the first Fast and the Furious movie, I don't think that I've ever seen it before.
You never seen the first one before?
I thought that I had, and then when I was watching it, I was like, I don't remember any of this. And then what I realized was that for some reason, I had confused Gone in 60 Seconds with the first Fast and the Furious movie.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make other than the fact that they're both about cars, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. They don't share any of the same cast members, and they're not even really about the same thing. It's just a lot. It's just cars. So, yeah, no, Too Fast, Too Furious was not good, and mm-hmm. I also just really hated that what they did with Paul Walker's character, the idea that after the first movie, he's just like this dude bro now who street races. And it it's kind of like a lamer version of First Blood Part 2 when they're like, oh, we got to call that son of a bitch Rambo back in. And they call him in and they set him out. And then they're like, oh, we got to call that son of a bitch. What's his? I don't even know his name. Is it Brian?
Yep, Brian.
Brian. Yeah, we got to call that son of a bitch Brian in. And then they do, and it's just that he's really good at racing.
Mm-hmm. And then he's just like, oh, also, well, they honestly, I could make excuses for that film all day because I'm horrible. But also, he's just like, okay, well, he was in the scene. He's not a cop anymore, but he knows how cops do things. And he also knows how to do street racing really well, and he knows the scene. So we need to get him in here so that he can do this race that is going to try to get him into this organized crime kingpins, smuggling ring or, you know, stuff like that. And then he's just like, well, I'll do this. And be like, you don't really have a choice. Because, like, I'll do this, but I have to get my friend who, like, I haven't seen in a million years, and he probably hates my guts, and also he's, like, on house arrest, and there's no reason why he would be able to do this. And they're like, okay. Like, they try to pretend that he puts up a big fight,
No, it's because Tyrese Gibson knows the parts of the car. And the other guy they were going to pair him with, when he asks him some kind of question, and the guy just, like, stares at him.
Right.
And, he's like, and then he's like, I can't do this with him. They'll instantly know that he's a fraud. And that made me laugh even harder, because the villains of the movie do not spend that much time talking with Paul Walker and Tyrese Gibson. They pretty much say, hi, here's your job, now go do it. That's like the whole, that's the only exchanges that they really have. Oh
yeah, pretty much. It was and Cole Hauser is the villain in this movie, and he is something. Like, he is just not doing anything. He's just kind of sitting there, like, staring, like he thinks he's menacing, but he's actually just, like, really boring and creepy.
Yeah. I think that he could have been fun if he was... I feel like he was trying to do a impression of Vin Diesel. Because Vin Diesel's one of those guys that can pull off, like, just staring and looking intense, and it works. But I would have really preferred to have, like, an over-the-top, crazy, psycho villain. I think that would have been a lot more fun. And it would have given... because Paul Walker and Tyrese Gibson.
Paul Reese
are both trying in this movie. And everybody else in this movie is pretty over the top, especially Ludacris.
Oh, yes, of course, Ludacris.
Oh, and the other part that... Or one of the parts that I did genuinely enjoy, just for how fucking stupid it was, is when the cops corner them in that warehouse, and then just, like, an unlimited number of cars come out of it. And they're just like, oh my god! Where did all these cars come from?
Yeah,
So yeah, no, that was the worst thing that I saw last week. What was the best thing that you saw last week, Donnie?
The best thing I saw last week.
Can I guess? Can I guess?
The best Carl Urban film that I saw last week.
Was Dread. Sure,
guess. It was Dread. I did watch Dread again, because why would I not watch Dread? Because
it's fucking gold.
I keep on wanting to watch Dread over and over again, because we're not getting a sequel. So that's just unfortunate, but it's what it is. But like I said, Dread is a film, and it's a very good film. So I will appreciate Dread until the end of my days, because it is a good film, and we have it. It's better than the Sylvester Stallone film, that's for sure. Although
that's not a high bar to clear.
That's true. I do love that film, though, just for how cheesy 90s it is. Because there is just some, like, Judge Dredd, and like I've actually gone back and like read quite a bit of like the actual comic strip, the comic book, like, because there's a lot of it. Like, it was like a weekly thing.
Yeah, it was like a weekly serial, right?
And it was like, it was just like cartoony, but also it's supposed to be a commentary on, like, you know, the police or society, and like it does it in such a ridiculous way, but it's like very poignant.
Yeah,
when it wants to be. Although sometimes I feel like it has a little bit too much to say, or I feel like its heart isn't in the right place, but it is saying the wrong thing entirely. But like, Dredd is pretty much what the title implies, is like, it's not Judge Dredd, you know, it's not a big subtitle, it's just Dredd. And that is what the film is about. It's a pure distillation of what Dredd is. Even because Dredd is supposed to be like this very straightforward, like, he's the best judge, like, he's who, like, all the other judges kind of fear, and he's the one who kind of, like, gets the work done.
Yeah.
In this, like, hellhole of, you know, Mega One City. Mega City One. And it all takes place, like, people compared it to The Raid, because it has a structure of, like, you know, them going into a building and then just going up the floors to, like, yeah. you know, a drug kingpin, or in this case, queenpin. because it's, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry. Yes, because it is played by Lena Headey, which I'm always appreciative to watch her in anything that's not Game of Thrones, because I do kind of hate her in that role. But as Mama, she is very good. She's
a great actress.
She's sick, but great. Mm-hmm. And I think that movie just has a lot, just like it plays around a lot with the concept of what they're doing. Like they made the script is super simple, but it's meant to be that way. And the stuff that it does get into, like, it is very to the point with it. It doesn't really, like, beat around the bush or have, like, this weird... I'm pretty much just, like, comparing it to the original Judge Dredd, where it's just, like, oh, it has to have these corny one-liners, or... trust me, there's some corny one-liners in there, but, like, they're, like, completely straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think at one point, he... it's when he shoots the fire flame bullet into the guy's head, but he says just, like, you're... I can't remember what he says, which is funny, because he's like, I don't know.
He says something like...
It's very bad.
Yeah. It's like a pun that you would have heard in Batman and Robin.
Yeah. But it's... Yeah, it's very good.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very sad that we're not getting another one, but Carl Urban is still alive, so I still have...
Hey,
also a reason why that movie was good is because it was written by Alex Garland. Alex Garland is like a fairly good writer when it comes to science fiction.
Yeah. I mean, he's given and his directorial films have been two of the best sci-fi movies ever. Annihilation and Ex Machina. Yeah, no. I
don't know if you have anything to say about Dredd other than it's good.
I mean, it's amazing. I remember when I watched it for the first time, and yeah, it was just great. Like, I did not have very high expectations, and every time that I've rewatched it since, I've continued to notice and appreciate more stuff about it. It's just a super fun movie to watch.
Mm-hmm. So, Jason... If we're done talking about Carl Urban, what is the best movie you watched this week?
The best movie that I watched this... So I have... I think I might have mentioned this last week. I bought a bunch of Blu-rays, or I have purchased a bunch of Blu-rays over the years that I have never watched. And I am slowly working my way through them because I am not... There's this one... I really want the Vengeance Trilogy, which is available on Amazon. Because I've never seen Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, and they've got a really cool version of Lady Vengeance on there, and I really want it, but I told myself I'm not allowed to get it until I watch everything that I own right now. So I watched a couple more movies that I haven't seen, and the best thing that I saw this week was a 2008 French movie called The Class. And I believe it either won or it was nominated for the, I think it's called the Palme d'Or, like the highest honor at Cannes Film Festival.
Uh-huh.
And it's a movie that's based on a book about, or that a teacher wrote about, like, what if all of the worst students that he had were in one class together? From, like, the course of his years teaching. And that's basically what the movie's about, is just this class of kids and this teacher and how he interacts with them and how they treat him. And it was really... I really, really liked it. It reminded me a lot of Chalk, which I think is a teacher movie that we're both fans of, unless I'm making that up. And
no, it's been a really long time. You saying Chalk is like, I have the memories, yeah. But it's been so long ago since I've seen it.
So it's really good. It's very depressing. I mean, as most movies about being a teacher are, just because it's a hard job and it's, you know, in terms of monetary value, not very rewarding. But it was really interesting and I really appreciated it. I really enjoyed seeing, I mean, it feels a little dated, just because of the slang that they kind of use. But even then, it was still a phenomenal film, and there's some very, very moving moments in the movie, and I'm a sucker for tragedies, so I really, really enjoyed it, and I thought that it worked really well as a a stark comparison to the fun-filled Fast and the Furious movies that I watched this week.
Sure.
So, on that note, let's get into it. We're not going to worry about spoilers and stuff, because this movie is pretty old. So, if you haven't seen it, that's on you. Yeah, so I'd just like to quickly say this, you know, some background info. This is the third film in the Fast and the Furious franchise, and it does not have any of the original cast in it, right?
Not until the very end.
The cameo at the very end. But other than that, it doesn't have anybody in it. And it was directed by Justin Lin, who you and I are both fans of, not just for his blockbusters, but for his film Better Luck Tomorrow, which is...
Yes, which is unofficially a prequel to this film.
We should do that movie sometime. Man, that...
I know, I thought about that because someone made a joke about, like... Because apparently Better Luck Tomorrow was on sale on iTunes, and someone needed to make a joke about, like... Oh, Fast and Furious prequel is $5 on iTunes, and it was Better Luck Tomorrow, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's right, we should have done that.
Oh.
But technically, it is not a Fast and Furious movie. However, it is Han is the same character. Like, Justin Lin has straight out said, yes, Han, who is played by Sung Kang in that film, is the same Han who's in this movie, but just in his high school days.
Man, that gives his character a whole darker turn.
Oh, yeah. Because he is not a good person in that film. No. Like, he's like a cool character in this one, but he is a bad person in Better Luck Tomorrow.
Yeah, we should... Let's just table this discussion for now, because we should definitely do Better Luck Tomorrow sometime.
Yes.
But yeah, I don't know if I mean, this was his first real blockbuster. I mean, before that he had mostly just done smaller flicks, and he did Tyrese Gibson and James Franco movie Annapolis, which was so bad that the Navy told them that they couldn't use like their official uniforms in the movie or something like that, which I thought was pretty funny. But yeah, no, for this being his first, especially knowing that he would go on to do, like, he was the one that made the Fast and the Furious movies what they are now, and like turned them into the crazy action films that everybody loves. And he also did probably the best, I would say, I don't know about you, he probably did the best of the new Star Trek movies, with Star Trek Beyond. Donnie is nodding, for those of you that cannot see, which would be everybody but me.
Yes, Star Trek Beyond, if you're talking about the new J.J. Abrams Star Trek films, is probably... I still have a lot of fondness for the first one,
same.
But Justin Lin did a very good job with the third one.
Especially after the horrible, frustrating movie that was Into Darkness.
That was a bad movie.
I mean... Okay, I just real quick want to say that one of my least favorite things about that fucking movie was that people kept asking J.J. Abrams, are you doing Wrath of Khan? And he kept saying, we are not doing Wrath of Khan. We are not doing Wrath of Khan. And then 20 minutes into the movie, my name is Khan!
Uh-huh. Which is said with the full expectation that everybody in the theater knows who Khan is. And everybody has the context. So it's only really to the fanboys, because everybody else who's just watching those films for the first time, like Star Trek 2008, have no idea what that means.
Well, I mean, let's be real. You you have to be familiar with the Khan.
Yeah, and, which that they also screw that up.
And you have to be familiar with the you know, the Wrath of Khan as a movie title. But yeah, it's, I mean, other than that, yeah, nobody really knows. Anyway, back to Fast and the Furious. As we've mentioned before, I'm not a aficionado of these films. So, Donnie, do you want to take a minute and just discuss where this fits in with the timeline?
Okay, children. So, this is... Tokyo Drift is the third film in the franchise. However, it is not chronologically correct with how these films are going, because the first one and second one are in chronological order. And then if you were to go to chronological order, you would not watch Tokyo Drift. You would go straight to Fast and Furious, which is number four, and then just keep going from there, because it is not until...
It's between six and seven, right?
Technically, because since we're not worrying about spoilers, Han dies in Furious 7 for the second time. Mm. And he, that scene is the stinger at the end of 6. It's the after credit sequence, because it shows that the person who actually hit Han's car was Jason Statham's character, who is the brother of the main bad guy in 6. So that is when Tokyo Drift takes place. And like I said, in Furious 7... when they finally, Vin Diesel goes to Japan to talk to the main character in this film, called Sean. He was already way too old to play a high schooler in this movie, and he has aged like a good 10 years mm-hmm. since that movie. So, like, Vin Diesel is Dominic Toretto is talking to Sean Boswell, like presumably 18-year-old. At most, and he looks like a 40-year-old man. So it's kind of off-putting, and the only problem that I have with that is that they used the footage from Tokyo Drift at the very end, and then they shot new footage. It would have been less jarring if they just shot all new footage, mm-hmm. but they didn't do
that. If they reshot the scene.
Right, yeah. Yes. Like, I think that probably would have been too expensive, because the way that they shot... like, the end of the movie, like, they would have had to try to get as many, like, things... like, well, they probably could have done it. They got the budget. They have, like, as much budget as they ever want for these films.
Yeah, whenever they have a problem, they can just throw money at it.
Mm-hmm. And so, in that case, I guess what I'm trying to say is that don't do that. Don't cast... and, like... like, Justin Lin didn't know that this was going to happen until he got the call back to make Fast and Furious 4. Mm-hmm. And then he never thought he'd be able to wrap back around in Tokyo Drift. Sean Boswell should have been a more prominent character earlier, like, in, like, the film franchise that wasn't just Tokyo Drift. But the way that the timeline moves up and the way that actors just... people just generally age makes this a horrible, horrible film decision.
So, real quick, I have read... or I've kind of gotten this impression from talking to fans of the series, and I'm curious if you agree. From what I get, the reason that they, like, brought... The reason that they went back in time and not forward with Fast and Furious... and then the fifth one and the sixth one is because, like, everybody loved Han so much and they thought that he was just such a great character, they kept wanting to have him be in the movies. And if he's dead, he can't continue to be in the films. I mean, is that basically what happened? Like, everybody just loves Han so much?
I honestly think because Sung Kang, and who plays Han, and Justin Lin just have, like, so much of, like, they want to work together so mm-hmm. much. And to be fair, like, Sung Kang, or, like, Han goes back to Tokyo like at the end of 6 because his lady friend dies. Mm-hmm. Spoilers for Fast and Furious 6. Everyone's seen these Fast and Furious movies. Don't pretend you haven't watched these movies. Sorry, Jason. But also, so he finally like makes his trek because he keeps on talking throughout the films like, I'll get back to Tokyo someday. And you're like, shut the hell up, Han. Or if you're really invested, like, no, Han, no.
Yeah.
You know what happens there. And so, like, I'm pretty sure Justin Lin was just like, oh, because they set up at the end of Tokyo Drift that, like, oh, Han was family, like, and Vin Diesel's just like, or Dom is like, oh, yeah, he was into American Muscle when he was rolling with me. So, like, gotta explore, you know, him, like, Han working yeah. with that crew. Which is good because I really like Sung Kang, mm-hmm. which I wish I could see him in more things. Han in this movie is he's likable, but also, I guess, unless they already had that friendship between Justin Lin and Sung Kang, I don't really think there would be quite a reason to bring Han back ever. Yeah. But I do appreciate more of him. And like as the series goes along, like you grow more attached to Han, just like you'd grow more attached to any of the other characters. And that's not true. Han is a better character than most of the. I'm digging myself a hole. But it's honestly your preference at this point if you're watching these movies.
Okay, so let's get into Tokyo Drift. And once again, just to remind everybody, Donnie has seen all of these movies. And I have seen...
Multiple times.
And I have seen the first three. And at some point, I started Fast and Furious and never finished it. and I do mean the fourth one, just to be clear. So,
it is a rough one.
Yeah. Okay. So, this is going to be fun because you are going to be talking about this movie and where it fits in with the rest of the Fast and the Furious movies. And I am going to be talking about this movie on the level of this is a movie that doesn't fit in with any of the movies that I have seen so far. So, this is going to be fun. So, just off the bat, I want to say that some of the things that I liked about this movie, because I do think it's a very serious improvement over Too Fast, Too Furious.
Too Fast, Too Furious.
And I also think in a lot of ways it's an improvement over The Fast and the Furious. I liked that there were a lot more practical effects in this one, that they cut down on a lot of the stupid CGI. However, I was kind of bummed because the editing in this movie, it's one of those things where it's like if you watch the Taken movies, there's a cut like every single second. And that's kind of how this film, like a lot of the racing sequences are shot. There's like a cut every second to like a different angle. And it's very irritating to try to watch because, I mean, a race is just a race. I mean, I get it, they're drifting and they're mostly just... I don't know why I'm doing this with my finger, but they're just going in circles.
Drifting.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yep, donuts.
Yeah, and I get that. But, like, at the same time, I would be much more impressed to just see that as opposed to being like, ooh, look at it from this angle. Now look at it from this angle. Now look at it from this angle. Now look at it from this angle.
It also doesn't help that our last episode was Death Proof, which it was very,
straightforward.
Like very long shots and like very clearly showing exactly what these cars are doing all the time, as opposed to, okay, you're switching to this camera angle. Where, what? Okay, they're here now. Okay, they're drifting. This person's behind this person now. I thought this person was. Wait, are they not?
One of the things that I really also really appreciated about this movie, and that I thought was really funny, is that the opening sequence of this movie, which would be before Lucas Black's character goes to Tokyo.
Yeah, Sean.
Before Sean goes to Tokyo, that first like 20 minutes maybe feels like somebody started writing a parody of like the first two Fast and the Furious movies, and then they used that for the opening to this movie. Especially the stuff with that girl and how she's like flirting with Sean, and then when she's like, you know what, the winner can have me.
Yeah, because they don't want to race for pink slips.
But then when they get into the cars, Sean, or she keeps looking at her boyfriend whenever Sean starts winning, and she's like, don't you love me? Why don't you go faster? I thought you loved me. And then it's all just amped up by the fact that Lucas Black is doing this insane southern accent that nobody else appears to be doing. It seems like it's just him.
That's true. That is kind of weird. It's a little bit out of place because, like, we do see his mother and we see his father, and they both speak in the film, and neither one of them have a southern accent like him.
Well, and it makes it even more jarring because then the movie moves to Tokyo, and...
Can we just, like, pretend that he's, like, Cameron Poe's, like, grandson?
That Cameron Poe, like, had an affair with...
with Sean's mom. Mm-hmm.
This is illegitimate child.
Because there's no other good... What if there's just, like, a prequel film where he's just watching Con Air all the time? Alright, we need to stop talking. We're just gonna become the Con Air podcast at some point, so we need to stop.
I could spend this whole episode just talking about his accent. And how ridiculous it is. But...
Honestly, I don't know whose decision it was, but it like... He seems like a southern gentleman when he's around the other, like when he's in America and he's still around other kids in California and stuff like that. Which is funny because he's in California. Like, it doesn't, I don't know.
Not a place where southern accents are frequent.
No, not Alabama. He's definitely not from Mobile, Alabama. but then when he gets to Japan, like, I totally get why they tried to do that. Even though his father doesn't have an accent. Because it's like, oh, like, they really want to, like, point out that he is really, like, this weird southern boy from America who's stuck in the middle of Tokyo. And he's just, like, this fish out of water, which is really funny.
I think it's hilarious that he is able to keep getting the money for all of these cars that he seemingly continues to destroy. I mean, even before he gets to Tokyo, his mom is like, this is the fifth time this has happened, or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, right. He's in high school. She doesn't appear to be doing that well financially. Like, how is he getting all the money to get all of these cars?
Yes, and he's set up to be a loner, so he doesn't have, like, a group of people who are, like, supplying.
He doesn't work at a garage or anything, like, in the first one. And he's definitely not an undercover cop. I mean, he could be because he's, like, 35.
No. I know. He was already undercover in a high school. That explains.
Oh, you know what? This is just a prequel to the 21 Jump Street movies.
Oh, Jesus. What if at the end it was, 23 Jump Street, Tokyo Drift.
True. That's a post-credit scene I'd like to see.
Are you sure? Yeah, true.
Hey,
at least they didn't do the crossover with Men in Black.
There's a driving school at the end of 22 Jump Street, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. It could be that one.
Yep.
Okay. I'm trying to think. What are some other things that I actually liked. I really liked the story for this one because it felt like a legitimate story, not just a retread of Point Break like the first two.
Yes, because that is, I mean, that's what everyone calls the first Fast and the Furious, is just like a remake of Point Blank except with cars.
Yeah, it's exactly, it's Point Break but cars and not surfers.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I'm sure there's a very obvious analog that we're not thinking of, but there's another film that we could probably compare this to. But honestly, the fact that this is so separated from the other Fast and Furious films is probably its strength. Because it's not, like, even though I like the following films and how ridiculous they get, like, that's the whole thing, is the spectacle, is they get so ridiculous, especially if we're talking about Hobbs and Shaw, is that, like, this is actually, like, I don't know, like, between the Fast and the Furious and Tokyo Drift, I don't really know which one is, like, more grounded. Because I actually feel like maybe this one is, like, this and the Fast and the Furious are kind of, like, on the same
level. I think that if this movie was, if he was in college, I would have a much easier time believing this movie. Because where are all of these goddamn high schoolers getting all of these really expensive cars?
Hmm?
That's my biggest...
Oh, there's the Yakuza.
Still, though. It's ridiculous.
Oh, a bunch of rich kids. Ugh. Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to say. Sometimes you just have to go with it. Because a lot of this film also... Like, it's not trying to lead you through a bunch of logic. It's a Fast and Furious movie. And the great thing is that it is, like, Justin Lin trying to, like... Try to do the most basic thing. But he's just like, I'm just going to put all this flair around it. And just, like, make these characters and have them say... Try to make these characters, like, they're still archetypes, but they're not, like, annoying archetypes. I don't know if what you thought about the main girl lead's performance. Especially during the scene where they are drifting and they are talking about why drifting is their best escape. Because when they're all, like, in the drift train, and it's maybe, and then it zooms out, and then it's their CG cars, and it's, that's maybe one of the corniest scenes in the entire movie, and they try to be as sincere as possible while they're drifting.
I mean, I have to be honest, after Lucas Black's insane performance in this movie, I mean, anybody else who's on screen is fine.
Okay. Like, wow, you're...
Yeah,
grounded.
I mean, even Bow Wow and his stupid fucking Hulk car, which by the way,
which is always
where the arms are, it just looks like his car is dented.
Well, where the foot is, too, I mean, isn't that, like, it implies that the Hulk is in the car and he was trying to break out?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. It looks stupid.
Yeah, it's not good. And also, Sean is very in the right in going, like, this is a horrible car.
I know.
Okay, I'm
driving.
And
then I was bummed, though, because, like, they never bring it back, like, his Hulk car. I mean, I thought that he was going to be, like, there was going to be a part where Bow Wow was like, nah, man, check this out. I'm actually pretty good at some kind of racing with this car. But nope. Or I'm, like, a huge, incredible Hulk fan. Nope. I just got this car. Like, they never reference it again. It's never, like, they don't do anything with it. And I was just like, why?
No, other than the fact that Bow Wow has to, he has to pop one of the speakers in the very back to give Sean the money that, that Han gave him. Because I don't know why Han gave him the money, but he says that Han said that Sean should have it because that's the money that he needs to go back to Sonny Chiba's character to try to make it right so he doesn't die going out of the bar because he has to try to make a deal with that money. And I was like, wait a second. And the whole film is like Han like skating around DK or the Drift King. I can't remember the character's name, but he is the Drift King. He is the main villain. And he's always skating around. He's like, where's the money? When's the shipment, Han? And he's like, don't worry about it. And be like, Han, you were an idiot. Like, stop, like, tempting this very emotional person who, like, might actually cause violence to you. And Han just doesn't care. He is completely checked out. But I suppose I was drifting away from my point, is that that is when we see the car. So there is little relevance to it, but like no, like, oh, hey, Bow Wow showed up at the last second with his car or anything like that. It's not that doesn't do anything.
Yeah, it just felt like they were like, there's a Hulk movie. That's a thing. Let's just Hulk.
Well, this was in 2006. Oh yeah, the Hulk was out, but not the Incredible Hulk. This was before the cinematic universe was even here.
Yep, just Hulk. Ang Lee's thinking piece on the Hulk.
Yes. Ugh. Meditation on what it means to be upset.
One of my favorite things is there's a scene of the Hulk staring at like a flower, and somebody, I think it's an Honest Trailer, somebody dubs it and yells, "Hulk, introspect!" Which I thought was pretty funny.
I'm
gonna start. I don't have a whole lot of other stuff to talk about in regards to specifically this movie. I just want to say that I was genuinely surprised and that I actually really enjoyed it. I know that it's a silly car movie, but I was surprised, and it made me feel bad for all the shit that I've given it over the years for
wow.
existing. Yeah, I know.
We have that in
recording.
It's
a rare humility moment of humility for me.
Well, and that's why it's always quoted as being a lot of people's favorite Fast and Furious, just because it's this closed off thing. The characters are fairly memorable because, well, one, Lucius Black just has that ridiculous accent, so it's hard to forget him. It's like it honestly, it has a lot to do with Justin Lin. Justin Lin is just like he knew exactly what he needed to do. He was very familiar with the culture, and he was able to not exploit it, but he was able to convey the things in an appropriate manner and make it seem like breathe life into a franchise, which this didn't have to be a Fast and Furious movie at all. Like, there's no reason. It could have just been Tokyo Drift. It didn't have to have the Fast and Furious title on it. But this is the film that allowed them to make a fourth one and bring back everybody from the first two movies. So without Tokyo Drift, there would be no big Fast and Furious franchise. So, because after that, if, like, Tokyo Drift hadn't been a big thing because it was released in theaters, if they made any Fast and Furious movies after that, it would all be, like, straight to DVD.
Yeah.
So, I think there is a... Even if it's maybe not people's favorites, I think it's probably the most important, and I think the one that people should appreciate the most, even if it's they really love, like, 6 or 7, or 5 is very, very good. Like, you can't get to those without Tokyo Drift first.
Yeah, and I mean, this is the one that, like you said, set up. I mean, even if you like the other ones more, this one is more important because this is the one that gave Justin Lin the reins and let him just go wild with it.
Which he went through until 6. And then James Wan took over on 7, and then F. Gary Ross.
The guy that did Barbershop?
I think so. Was it?
I'm gonna look. Snob.
Okay. Right on. He also, I think he, it's the guy who did the last two Hunger Games.
Is it?
Gary, I'm just talking
F. Gary
about,
Gray?
Oh,
is that his name?
Let's see. I think F. Gary Gray.
Name. Yeah, F. Gary Gray. Who? Oh, Friday. That's what it was. It wasn't Barbershop, it was Friday. Yeah. He directed Friday.
Right on.
And then he also did Straight Outta Compton and The Italian Job And
oh, there you go. He already kind of had experience with that, with the Italian job.
And then he also did The Negotiator, a couple other movies. Like Be Cool.
Right on.
Oh, and Men in Black International.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Which I have not seen, so I will not speak to the quality of that film.
I have no interest in seeing this film.
All right. This has really been, like, all the steam has just ran out of this episode. And no, I did have this fear when I was watching the film a little earlier today. Was like, I like this film a lot. I don't know if we're gonna have a whole bunch to talk about.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I mean, it's, don't get me wrong. Like, I know that we've both said a lot of good things about it, and I mean, I'll be honest, a lot of that just has to do with how much I thought I was going to not like it. I mean, it's still got a lot of problems. Like I mentioned, the editing is very irritating. As you pointed out, some of the CGI that they do have is very frustrating to watch.
Yes, but for the most part, they did invest a lot of money into, like, actual mm-hmm. car stunts, which you said you appreciate, and it definitely shows, even if they do, the editing doesn't have a good way of, like, showing that off.
And I felt, you know, and I think maybe now that I think about it, like, the Bow Wow Hulk car in the first movie, they do a lot of the goofy, like, doesn't the Asian dude drive his car with, like, a PlayStation controller, and, like, each person has, like, their own gimmick for their car, and they make it even crazier with the second one, because there's, like, the all-girl team, and she's got, like, a little computer screen, which doesn't make any sense because it doesn't appear to do anything other than reflect her own emotions back at her, but in, like, anime version of herself. And yes. I was kind of happy that even though the cars in this movie are pretty ridiculous, it didn't feel like they were trying to one up the ridiculous cars from the other movies, which, you know, as you'd mentioned, makes it feel a little bit more grounded in reality. And then, I mean,
yeah, this is the film that probably has a little bit more respect mm-hmm. for racing culture than the last two films.
Yeah, and I mean, Lucas Black is awful in this movie. I would enjoy the story a lot more if it, I just pretend in my head that it's, he's in college, because then everything makes a lot more sense. And I don't know, they do a good job touching on some of the Yakuza stuff, but I mean, this is a very messy movie, but it's still pretty fun to watch. So yeah, I don't know, it's fine. If you've ever,
I find myself watching the film,
I would say, as someone who is highly skeptical about watching this movie, that, you know, if you feel the same way, I would recommend just checking it out. And I think it's mm-hmm. interesting that I was looking at some rankings of the Fast and the Furious movies, and I know that critically this is one of the lower, like, worst received ones, but it seems to be very high on a lot of people's rankings of the films, so I thought that was kind of funny. So yeah,
would you call it a cult classic?
I don't think,
Jason,
it's to that point yet. Until it gets some midnight showings, it's not a bona fide cult classic.
And also, I'm waiting for the people who love Too Fast, Too Furious to come out of the woodwork, and so we can beat them down. There's all these rivalries within the Fast and Furious fandom, in which I will strike down anyone. I'm in the Tokyo Drift camp, and anybody who wants to talk to me about it, I'm, like, adjacent from the Fast and Furious 5 camp, because, like, Fast 5 is a very good, mm-hmm. very good film. That's when they went full ridiculous for the first time, And those are the two, I would have to say. Those are the ones I'm willing to fight anyone about. But I cannot defend Too Fast, Too Furious to save my life.
It's a rough watch.
It's a
it
rough
is. Watch. I thought that that movie was 2.5 hours long. Like...
And it's like, what?
Yeah, it's like 90 minutes. Like, that's always a sign of a bad movie when you're watching it and you're just like, oh my god, how much time has passed? And then you check and it's been like 20 minutes. So, alright. Well, this has been a delightful discussion on... I feel free because I finally watched this goddamn movie. In the same way that you will feel free when you finally watch Source Code. And also my copy of Revenge that I borrowed you.
Oh.
Although you haven't had that for near as long as Source Code.
No, not near as long as Source Code. I have not watched Source Code. Let's just get
Yeah, and I haven't watched Alpha
episode.
Someday.
Why won't you?
Because it sounds
Alpha,
fucking
Jason.
Stupid.
Yeah. But you said you were going to watch it.
I get around to it.
Someday.
I'm going to watch it and I'm going to love it.
Yikes. Yeah, no. I don't know if that's going to be...
I'm
going to
be very depressed if that's what happens. That's going to be... That's all my suicide note's going to say. Alpha. Alpha was good, and then I'm going to sign it in blood.
Terrible. Good times.
All right. So, as we're wrapping up, I do quickly want to thank... we got our first request to do a movie. So, and it's one that I actually really like. And it's one that I don't think that you have ever seen. We can talk about that more later. Just the two of us, but I just want to say thank you to Bobby Griggs for recommending a film that we do. Would like to just, you know, if there's a movie that you guys want to hear us talk about, please tell us what it is and we will probably talk about it. So, probably. Eventually. Once we get a copy of it. It's another car movie, and I mean, we've done a lot of car movies recently. And by a lot, I mean two.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Argue with Jason because I like to argue with people about shit. So get at me. I'm gonna point at you.
And me. You're just pointing at me. And you can follow what I get up to. I'm on Twitter. At Dogeon the Third, which is DogeonThe3rd, and that I really just retweet things. I don't actually make tweets because that's not fun. You just follow people and see the cool stuff that they do, and then you just retweet stuff because that's what social media is. So don't expect a lot from me. But also, if you're on Twitter, feel free to follow The Outer Frame, because the more people we have following us, the more exposure, everything like that. Otherwise, yeah, I mean, just leave me
follow the show on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. Each account has a different person running it. I've gotten a lot more active. Yeah, the definition of running it is loosely being used. Although I have gotten a lot more active on the Facebook, and my goal is to post something 2 times a day, and I feel like I'm doing okay at it. So, and it's been fun because I've gotten to have some conversations with people, and that's been pretty enjoyable. So, please like our podcast on and review it, give it a good review. Don't give it a bad review. Unless you don't like it, then give it a bad review. In case you don't understand how reviews work. That's my explanation of reviews.
Yeah, we don't care, please, as long as you listen. And if you don't like us, then don't listen. That's, I mean, I don't know if I have to tell you how to live your life, but that's just kind of how you should do stuff.
I would also like to say thank you to Dr. Tub Thumper for doing our musics. Thank you to Pralix for doing our arts. Thank you to Caitlin Industries for editing our show. And I think that's all I have to say. So, on that note, watch more movies. Goodbye!
Goodbye.